Hey, thanks for joining us at Praise Chapel. We hope you enjoy this message with Pastor Jamie Centeno from In the Light Ministries in Philadelphia. Pastor Jamie talks about how honor is critical in our lives, especially as the church. Also, we'd love to hear what God has done in your life. To share your story, email us at info@pcparamount.org. Again, we hope you enjoy this message.
Man, what a zone that we were in. Let me say a couple things and I'll get into this time. My wife didn't let you know, but we've been married for about 22 years now. Yes, yes. We were married at 2 years old. And we have five children, and they're awesome. Our oldest is 24, so I'll let you just work with the math. It's just gonna mess with your head. And so we've been pastoring now for about 11 years out there in Philadelphia. I'm originally born and raised in Philadelphia. My wife is from New Jersey, Trenton, New Jersey. And we connected at youth group. We didn't like each other much. Took us a couple years. And I grew on her like mold. We came together as young adults. And that was a time when we just started the relationship, really connected. Feeling like the vision piece was the piece that we would love to, that's what we were attracted to. We were attracted to the vision that was similar, and all the other stuff were fringe benefits to that. So we've been doing this for a while now, married at 20. She was 19 years old, moved to Lancaster, was up there for about 9 years, there where we got discipled by Pastor Phil Hernandez out of In the Light Ministries Lancaster. Was running the young adults, was doing some things with the youth ministry, was overseeing the multimedia ministry, was one of the youngest elders. I always thought it was cool that I was an elder, because I so don't look like an elder. Or what you would think an elder would look like, right? Anyway, we were one of the elders there, and it was such an honor and privilege to be able to do what we did. God put it on our heart after that many years, and placed it on our pastor's heart that we would go back to Philadelphia and plant a church there, which we've done, and it's been quite a journey. That would be a whole other sermon, but just to say that there's a move of God happening in Philadelphia, and we're so glad we said yes in the midst of all the challenges. We're so glad we said yes. So what I want to talk to you about today is, what I'm thinking about this subject or this topic, when people would come to me and say, hey, what do you think is the key to success of, like, some of the early success that you experienced as a church? And there was a bunch of things that we did and creative elements to what we had as a church and the way that we would creatively evangelize and create. There was all these different elements, but I had to be honest. The thing that I believe was a key to what God was doing and how we were able to sustain what God was doing was based on this thing that I'm going to talk to you about today. And I believe that what we're going to talk about today, like it or not, I don't think miracles really manifest, the supernatural is really not felt or experienced to the degree it can be experienced if this is not something that's in our lives. On a personal basis, on a church basis, it's just one of those things that we elude a lot of the miracles and a lot of the power of God if this is not central principle in our lives. Now, I want to say this, is that I love technology. I love tech. Any techies out there? I'm a geek. I'm a geek when it comes to that. I love technology. I love getting the latest gadgets and looking into them. I have good friends who are probably more geeked out than I am. I love to talk to them, even though sometimes I really don't understand their language. But I still enjoy the whole premise of technology. And whenever I get something new, I don't know if you do this, like you get a new phone or a new computer, I want to find out everything it can do. I want to push it to its limit. I want to know that I can get the most out of whatever I'm given. I don't want just a new phone just so I can make phone calls. I want to play with the animojis. I want to find out if there's some little hidden secrets in the background that cause the phone to be enhanced, whether that's saving battery life or what have you. So I'm like that. That's the kind of guy I am. When I discover these new technologies or these new things, I want to push it to its limit. That's what I did with honor. This principle of honor, when I first discovered it and first started hearing about it, Not just, you know, how we sing songs, glory and power and honor go to God. You know, I know there's Christian vernacular that we use and we think we know it because we sing about it. Are you here? We think we know it, but I wanted to go more in depth with this idea of honor. I wanted to find out what it's really about. I wanted to understand why we give it to God and what it all looks like in our lives. And so honor was this principle that began to intrigue me. And so I did the same thing. I just saw, I wanted to push it how far I can push it. So some of the things that we did, there's pastors in our city. And while we were down there, I wanted to bring them out and just treat them to a meal. I wanted to hear their story. I wanted to honor them. I wanted to find out who the apostles were in our city. And I wanted to be a blessing to them and give them money just to show that I value them and I see that there's a worth to them. Thanking God that they were in that city along with me. So I was pushing those things. That's some of the things I did. I remember us getting some statesmen and some people that were police captains and authority figures in our city. And I wanted just to demonstrate honor, so we would bring them out. We would pray for them. They wouldn't expect it, but we would give them a financial offering. We'd just be a blessing to them. However you want to use that for your family or for the organization, even people from organizations that were doing a great job in our neighborhoods, these unsung heroes, bringing them out to our church, and again, just being a blessing to them. I just kept pushing and pushing this thing. I remember there was a time where there was people that I was, you know, they were talking smack about us. I know that's hard to believe that they would talk smack about pastors or people, but there were people that were doing that. They left their church. They were talking smack along the way. And I was like, man, I was hearing about that. So I was like, what did they say? You know what? Give them a fruit basket. Send a fruit basket right away over to their address. Just let them know how much we love them and appreciate them. I just wanted to push this honor because there was, again, scriptures I was reading. There was things I was understanding about this. I was like, okay, let's see if this really feels like hot coal on their heads when we do a kind act, when they do something that's horrible to us. Let's see what a kind act does to them. Let's see what honor does in the face of dishonor. And so we just kept pushing those things. And I believe that was one of the keys to our successes. I really do. I believe some of the things that we did early on and being blessings to pastors, blessings to people, being blessings to officials, the unsung heroes around us, even people that were dissing us, honoring them, I believe that God said, oh, I can trust you. I can trust you with miracles. If you're putting weight on people and putting value on people like sometimes they deserve and don't deserve, there's a sense that I'm going to release something to you. I'm going to entrust something to you as you do those things. Honor is treating someone or something as weighty. Like they have weight. They're not just lightweights. They're not just something that you ignore, but it has a weight to it. You ever get around people and they just have a weight to them? You just know that there's a significance and importance in their life. You ever get starstruck? And you just get around those people, it's like there's a weight, whether there's an influence that they carry. But this is what it means to honor. It's to consider somebody to have weight or significance. So what they say, you pay attention to. If there was a person up here that was just trying to, you know, kind of broke but talking to you about finances, you wouldn't treat them with weight. You wouldn't see and hear the words as weighty words. But you got somebody up here who's making money. You got a Mark Cuban or somebody else up here talking about money. You are glued into their financial advice, aren't you? You're like, this person has weight. You treat them with honor because you know what they carry. So honor is putting extreme worth on value on something. So how do we see with the eyes of heaven so we know what deserves honor? It's not like, you know, I don't know how it is for you, but our children sometimes when they come from on Sunday school classes and they bring in their art project from the Sunday school class. And like, oh, that is so beautiful, honey. And you kind of toss it out as soon as you get in the car. It's like that is not as dishonor, but you don't treat it as weight. It's kind of like something, it's not like a Picasso. It's not like one of those things. But treating something as weight is to put extreme value that you don't treat it lightly or just toss it away. The measure of power in a place, hear this, the measure of power in a place can be equal to the measure of honor in that place. That's what I've learned. I've learned when there's a place of honor, God unleashes unlimited power. I'm going to show you that. Because I think honor is one of those underrated things that we don't realize the significance of it. And we just go about our lives, and we live in a culture that's so dishonorable sometimes, right? And everything that people are guilty before proven innocent, and we're always looking at people suspiciously, and what can you do for me before I can even do something nice for you? And honor is one of those things that I believe the atmosphere of heaven is made up of honor. And so one of the things that you can see in Mark 6, 1 through 6, read the scripture, it says Jesus left that part of the country and he returned with his disciples to Nazareth, his hometown. The next Sabbath he began teaching in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. They asked, where did he get all this wisdom and the power to perform such miracles? So there's this moment where they're actually intrigued with what Jesus is doing. And then it says they scoffed all of a sudden. And he's just a carpenter, the son of Mary and the brother of James, Joseph, and Judas, and Simon. And his sisters live right here among us. And then they became deeply offended and refused to believe him. Do you see this bipolar spirit that went from a place of, man, look at all the things he can perform and the things that he does. And then people started whispering, wait, wait, wait. This guy that you're enamored by and that you're honoring, he's one of us. He's regular. That's Joseph's son. That's Mary's son. His brothers are here amongst, and all of a sudden they got offended at him and they shut down honor in their heart towards Jesus because they got familiar with him. Says this, then Jesus told him, a prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family. And because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles among them except place his hand on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. But do you see this? The measure of honor will be equal to the measure of power in a place. And if we discount who God is using as a vessel to bring his power or bring a message through, then we will cut off the blessings that they can be in our lives. You say like this, that often God, he puts what you need in a package that you don't want. And it's up to you to have the eyes of honor to be able to see past the package and see what's inside, the treasure that's inside. What I also think honor does, honor attracts what's good on them to be able to be accessed by you. That's why the devil, I think, tries to keep us from seeing with eyes of honor, because it actually prevents what's good on them to get on you. Matthew. Oh, let me say this one first. Matthew 10, 41. If you receive a prophet as one who speaks for God, you will be given the same reward as a prophet. If you receive a righteous person because of their righteousness, you will be given a reward like theirs. You know what this is saying to me? This is saying that I might not be a prophet, but if I know how to honor a prophet, I know how to honor the gift that's on somebody else, I get the reward or the benefit of maybe something they had to work for. All I got to do is honor. It's like a life hack right there, y'all. That is a life hack. All I need to do is honor what's on you, and I attract it to me. And a righteous man, all I have to do is be honored and recognize that this is a righteous person, and the reward of that righteous person comes to me. That's how heaven works, is the sense where there's, again, the cross is not only horizontal, it's vertical. There's a sense that we have to stretch ourselves to receive and be a blessing to the others, whether they receive our honor or not, is not the point here. is that I don't want to be robbed of the blessing that can come to me if the best of me honors the best of me pulling out the best in you. You ever get somebody who's dishonorable? What does it do when they're dishonorable or disrespectful? It's like the worst of them pulled out the worst in you. You ever get that little road rage syndrome on you? They just cut you off, or they just, like, somebody says something or does something, or you're in a room with somebody with just a hardcore attitude. And it's like, I was feeling good until I got into this place. Like, what kind of atmosphere that it come into? You came into an honor, you came into an atmosphere of sometimes dishonor. And dishonor has a way of pulling out the worst in you. But if we can stop it in its tracks, no matter how dishonorable something is, if I can be honorable and the person is disrespectful and dishonorable, I believe this principle, if you experiment with this principle, that I can still honor you even though you're dishonoring. I can still respect you even though you're disrespectful. And I've seen just a change in people where I pulled out the best in them, even though they were dishonorable and disrespectful to start with. Look at this. In Matthew 15, this one trips me out. I hope you can follow me with this. How much time we got here? Oh, we're good. All right. So check this out. This is one of those stories I read with Jesus. I'm like, dang, like, he just went in. I mean, I know there's a different ways you could preach or look at this, but this is crazy how he treated this woman. It's this story in Matthew 15, starting in verse 21. It says this: Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan, just remember, say Canaan with me. Canaan, I want you to remember that. Came from that region and cried out to him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. So there was issues happening at the home. There was a challenge with her children. And of course, the home was probably a wreck from this demon-possessed daughter. And so this is her situation. And she's coming and she's crying out for what? Mercy. She's pleading with him. And it says this: But he answered her not a word. Totally ignored her. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, Send her away, for she cries out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now he's talking to her. And then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. So even though he just ignored her, even though he said, I'm not even sent for you, you're from Canaan. Your situation, let somebody else deal with that situation. I'm not even dealing with that situation. You know, I'm filling in the blanks of how I'm seeing this thing. And it says, she still pleads out for him to help, but he answered and said, It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to little dogs. Oh, no. Don't say that to a Puerto Rican woman. Don't say that to a Mexican woman. Don't say that to anybody. He just called her a dog. I don't know how that translates in your culture, but that's offensive and that is vulgar. Why is he treating this woman this way? You ever wonder that? Like, why is he putting her through such a test? And you would think that would be the last straw. At that point, she would be posting up on social media. Oh, no, he didn't. He did not do this. Do you know this Jesus that you're following, what he is like, calling women dogs? I had a situation. He didn't want to fix my situation. And just go with this attitude out of there, just putting him on blast. And then this is her response to this moment. And she said, after he called her a dog, and she said, Yes, Lord, yet even little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Total honor. Total honor. Even in the midst of something that seems so disrespectful, why is Jesus doing this? Why is he acting this way? And all of a sudden, something switches, and now Jesus answered her and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. all of a sudden her miracles are in her home. Do you see, like, miracles? There's a miracle. Her home situation, whatever generational curse was there, was obliterated because she chose to honor in the midst of dishonor. But I still can't shake it. Like, why was Jesus doing this with this particular woman? Because he didn't treat anybody else like that. Do you remember him treating anybody else like that? So I don't know about you, but I like to go into a thing. Like my technology, I like to go into, I need to find out what in the world was happening here that he was so dishonorable, if you will, and she was so honorable, and then all of a sudden something switched and something reversed. One day, I stumbled upon it. It happened back in Genesis. I had to look at, was there something significant to where she was from and who she was? And sure enough, there was. In Genesis, it says this. What scripture it is? Genesis, I don't know the chapter right now off the top of my head. I think it's like 9 or something. Verse 18. It's, which one? Well, it says this. Trying to look at what they got there. Okay, 18. It says this. Now, the son of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. These three were sons of Noah, and from these the whole earth was populated. And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk and became uncovered in his tent. Dang. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside, put them on blast. But Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders and went backwards and covered the nakedness of their father. They didn't even want to look at him and put him out there, expose him. Their faces were turned away and they did not see their father's nakedness. So Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done to him. Then he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants he shall be to his brethren. Here you have Noah, the father of these guys, and he did something that was probably not wise, and he got a little excited with the new wine, and in that he got drunk. Got so drunk, I don't know, I guess your clothes just fall off when you get so drunk. It's just like nothing can stay on. And so he's just out there, full Monty, hanging out in the tent. His son comes in, and when his son sees him, it's kind of like his son just comes with this, man, I gotcha. I'm exposure. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna tell everybody in the world. Which were just his two brothers, but it was everybody in the world. He just put it all out there. He's like, can you believe this guy? So he just put it out there, didn't even cover for his father, didn't do anything honoring, more dishonor, and expose his father in that moment of vulnerability. And as he did so, when his father was awakened and found out what happened, he cursed him. Now, there was a generational curse because of dishonor. Because dishonor makes you disconnected. Dishonor brings disease and dysfunction. So here is the origins of this moment where later on, Jesus shows up. And as Jesus is there, the Canaanites, if you will, are still servants to servants. They still have this generational curse because no one's broken the streak of dishonor. So this woman comes to Jesus, and we know the story. What does Jesus do? Jesus makes himself vulnerable. Jesus says, if we're going to reverse this curse, we're going to have somebody who honors in the midst of dishonor. So Jesus actually has to expose himself, if you will, to something that she can easily go out there and uncover Jesus. And say, this guy is he's a scoundrel. This guy is just, he hates women. She could do all those things. So he totally uncovers himself. But what does she do? She keeps covering him. She keeps covering him. She keeps covering him. And as a result of that, Jesus knew, he said, the only way we break this is if there's honor. Honor will break this generational curse. Your daughter's probably dealing with this, what she's dealing with because of this dysfunction of dishonor. And that's what opened up. Honor opened up the miraculous. Honor reversed the curse that was in the families. Honor did it. Generations of people struggling now was eliminated because a woman was willing to break the cycle through honor. Isn't that powerful? In Malachi, right there in chapter 4, verse 5 and 6, it says, behold, I will send to you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he will turn and the hearts of the fathers, he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. You see that? If there's not an honor between two generations, then there's a curse that gets perpetuated. Guys, I want to make you so excited about honor. I want you to make it this new thing that you guys are on, and that there's people out there that would think you become honorable and makes you a doormat to somebody else. No, no, no. It makes me I'm attractive to the miracles. I'm attractive to the power. What honor does is bring the best of you out. So when I give you the best of me, so honor is a powerful thing that the enemy would like to keep hidden from us. And right here it says, right before that gap between Malachi and Matthew, he says, if there is no honor between generations, the land will be cursed. We need fathers with the hearts for the sons and sons for the hearts of their father. You know, in Philadelphia, we have in Philadelphia, this is a city that was founded or established by William Penn. Pennsylvania, where we get the name Pennsylvania. So that was an inheritance that he had. He wanted it to be a holy experiment. He wanted it to be a place where people from different religions could come and find safety, and they could practice, and they would be able to be tolerant and respectful to one another. That was his whole thing. He even, with the Indians that were there, let's coexist, let's build them up. And so he had a bunch of treaties that he made with the Indians so that they would be able to thrive in the area of Philadelphia. Do you know what happened not too long after he passed away? His sons get the inheritance of Philadelphia, and his sons are the ones who broke the treaty with the Indians. Actually, broke the treaties and kind of just said, well, that's what my father did, but that's not who we are. You need to go. Basically like that. Total dishonor to the indigenous people of that area. The father established one thing, and the children basically broke that up and disconnected and dishonored the people that were there. I believe us in Philadelphia, the reason why you don't feel like it's a climate of brotherly love, even though it's called the city of brotherly love, we call it more brotherly shove, but it's because I believe what's over that city needs to be broken, and it has to go back to the fact that there's sons who dishonored what their father had established. They were covenant breakers. They totally dishonored the people. And as a result, it caused rifts. And later on, you would discover about Philadelphia. Now you were segregated in certain neighborhoods, and people wouldn't cross certain boundary lines. If they would, it would be at the expense of violence, because there was a generational curse over that place because of the dishonor. We believe God has called us there to repair that generational strife. And it's not easy. And it is challenging. And you're talking about something that's pretty ancient there. But that's why I believe God has also called us to Philadelphia. Is because if we're going to see revival in that city, it's going to have to be through the principle of honor. Honoring the generations before us. Honoring the things that are good there. Not just pointing out the things that are wrong there. And uncovering our city and exposing our city. But more honoring and highlighting the blessing that's there. And we can do that for all of our cities. And we should do that for all of our neighborhoods. Discover what those things are that have been rifts. Dishonor disconnects, causes dysfunction, and brings disease. How do we replace that? How do we eliminate that? It is through the principle of honor. Generational strife is real. And so it talks about that in Malachi. You know what I found between the older generation and the younger generation? I found that the older generation just wants to be honored. Older generation just like, listen, just respect what we've done. They just want to be honored, and the younger generation just wants to be affirmed. The older generation just kind of recognize that we've done some things and we might not have arrived, but at least we've gotten awesome stuff. We're doing better than what my family did and what happened in my life. Am I right? It's like we've done some things. All we're looking for is probably some respect and honor, and the younger generation won't give it to them because they feel like they need to be affirmed. The older generation communicates with language. And the language that they communicate a lot of times is the actions. This is what I've done for you. So this is like this is should be honored and recognized. Now you have the younger generation, and there's a generational rift because they don't communicate in language all the time. They communicate in emojis. They communicate in grunts. Like, man, they communicate in acronyms. You know, and it's like letters that you put them together and then they spell out something. And so there's this generational rift because one wants to be affirmed and the other one wants to be honored. And it's like this tug of war. But again, in Malachi, it says we need to bring fathers and sons. We need to bring an older generation and another generation and a younger generation. They need to work together. When they are merged and there's blessing on families, there's blessing in the land, there's blessing in the churches. So that's been one of our mandates. It feels like, man, if we could just teach them about honor, have them be attracted to honor, what it looks like, and that both of them meet each other in the middle if they have to, but they come together and they realize, I'm going to do my part to honor you, and I'm going to do my part to honor you. And so it takes me to this last scripture here, where here is this major moment in the life of Mary and Elizabeth. In Luke 1, 39, Mary rose in those days and went to the hill country with haste in the city of Judah, and she and entered into the house of Zacharias and saluted Elizabeth. Saluted. And it came to pass that when Elizabeth heard the salutation of Mary, the baby in her leapt in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Ghost. And she spake out with a loud voice and said, blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb. I want you to see, these are two generations. Mary is the younger generation. You speak in emoji generation. And Elizabeth is her older cousin. She is the older generation. But there's something that Mary does that triggers what's inside of Elizabeth. It says she saluted Elizabeth, or if you will, she like showed her honor. It was a way that she greeted her. That was like the salutation. And it says upon the salutation, not just her arrival and her showing up, she did something of honor, and that act of honor caused a response of what was inside of her. This is such a good picture here, because what we've got to realize, younger generation, what we've got to realize, older generation, is that two generations are pregnant at the same time. That older generation still has something inside of them. That older generation still has something. They're not like, oh, you're so old-fashioned. You can't give birth to nothing. What's inside? You've already did the best you can do. No. Not in this scenario. Not in what God is doing. And what God is doing, there's a younger generation that has to affirm and recognize there's an older generation that still has something to give birth to. They have something to contribute. They have something to say. Their dreams are not dead. There's something that's still inside of them. It shouldn't just be ignored. And as soon as that younger generation, not the older generation to the younger generation, but the younger generation, it is our responsibility to know how to honor the older, despite what we see, despite what we might not understand. We salute them. We honor them. Because as soon as we do, what's inside of them is actually what they're pregnant with. This is why the enemy wants to mess with this. Because what's inside of Elizabeth, what's inside of the older generation, actually is there to make way for what's inside of Mary. John the Baptist was going to make a way to what Jesus, what Mary was going to birth Jesus, but who was the way maker for Jesus? It was John the Baptist. What's inside the older generation actually makes a way for the younger generation. And that's why there's this generational rift, and the enemy wants to keep us closed off to what they're pregnant with. We've got to learn their language. We've got to move towards them. Because there's prophecies we're missing out on because we don't know how to honor an older generation. Because as soon as that younger generation honors, there's a prophetic word that affirms what's inside of them. See, the younger generation is looking for affirmation. And it's all good. It's coming as soon as you release a spirit of honor. Honor releases the prophetic word. Honor releases the thing that is inside of you to be affirmed and to be blessed. It's honor that makes a way. But we've got to recognize two generations are pregnant at the same time. When we salute, what are we doing? The younger generation, they're innovation. It's innovation saluting experience. It's like, I'm innovation. I got some creative ideas. Awesome, but I'm going to salute the older generation who has experience. It's the younger generation saluting with zeal. I have zeal. You have knowledge. I salute the knowledge that is on your life. It's the younger generation saying, I am spiritually hungry. But we're still saluting the spiritually seasoned. When that comes together, power is unleashed. I got a couple minutes here. Let me tell you a story of how that worked in my life. There's a story of me when I was pregnant with the future, right? Because there's this thing when God impregnates you with vision that you're like, oh, don't touch me. Don't get in my way. Don't mess with me. I know what I need to give birth to, and I know what it needs to look like. So I was kind of that dude, believe it or not. I was so ambitious to get where God wanted to take me, and I would use all those things to actually even rebel against the authorities that God would place around my life. But God started showing me this principle of honor, and thank God he did. I can recall that for me, I was really real dishonoring towards my dad, and my dad was a great guy. He's awesome. He's an urban missionary. He's a street evangelist. I was a pastor's kid and all that stuff. So he was amazing, but I just had this attitude, and I would disrespect him a lot, just tell stories and all that stuff. And so I remember when God was really getting a hold of my heart, and he was renewing my identity and healing father wounds that I had in my life, that it started to change, and I started just finding opportunities to honor him. I started asking him questions instead of him asking me questions. Like, he never talks to me. And I would say, you know what, let me talk to him, and let me find out his story. Sure enough, I found out his story, and it made sense the way I am and the way, you know, I was just looking around. I was just honoring the fact that, you know, he has something to say if I could just pull it from him. The best of me pulling out the best of him. I started doing those things, and so it was awesome. So that was that scenario, and asking him more about his story and his testimony. And you know, he got saved. He got saved at a camp. He got saved at a camp. He was going to commit suicide, and he was going to end his life. Long story short, he hears the story about Jesus. First time, he grew up Catholic, and he really know about Jesus. But that's a camp that was talking about Jesus, and they were inviting people to know Jesus. And he said, either I'm going to take my life, or I'm going to give my life to this man. They're talking about Jesus. And he chose Jesus. And as a result of that decision, we're here. As a result of the decision, we have the family we have. So powerful of honoring and recognizing his story. Years later, after I got saved, I would come to work for this camp. And the camp I would work for is the camp that he got saved in. And so I'm there, I'm working for the camp, and I have a boss there. And I have these things I want to do with the camp and things I want to do with this organization. So I'm pregnant with something, but I'm so disrespectful the way I go about it. I'm totally like, this guy don't know what he's doing. This guy is a slowpoke. All this stuff, like dissing, like who he is as a leader and as a person. God convicted me. And I came to the place like, look, I apologize. He didn't know I was saying this stuff. But I came to him and I said, I need to apologize to you. I just want to honor the vision that you have. I want to learn the vision that you have for this organization. I'm here to serve and undergird that thing. And I just chose to honor him and really kind of look like a fool and doing what I did and making things right and embarrassed. That's so embarrassing that I would do this. He could have fired me on the spot because of who I was as an employee, the stuff he didn't know, the stuff that I was admitting for the sake of honor. So that was me. Years later, now I'm in Lancaster. Now I'm in Philadelphia planning a church. I hear that they're selling the camp. And the organization is just like liquidating stuff and they're going to sell the camp and it's breaking their heart. I call up my old boss that's now overseeing the whole thing in the organization. And I give him a call and I say, listen, I heard you guys are looking to sell the camp and all that stuff. And I just want to let you know, we'll be interested. There's a legacy there. And so we would love to continue on with the legacy of what God started at the camp. He said, you know what? Let me talk to the board and let me do all this stuff. Talks to the board. In that interaction, they said, you know, this would be so awesome. Here is a guy who worked for our organization. Here's a guy that his father got saved there. He has history. And they agreed unanimously that they would not let us pay for the camp, but they would bless us with the camp. And we would have 53 acres of land and a whole camp facility. But I think about that story, and the blessing is this. The blessing is, imagine if I dishonor. Imagine if I dishonor that boss that later on I would be asking those questions like, hey, what are you doing with the camp? Who do you think you are? Now it's my turn to get back at you because of how dishonorable you've been. But because of the honor I showed to them in those moments, because of the honor I showed to my father, here's what I say. I said, you know, that camp saved my father. And now his son is saving the camp. Isn't that powerful? The power of honor.
Hey, thanks for listening to this week's message from Praise Chapel Paramount. If you want to stay connected, follow us online with Facebook and Instagram at PC Paramount, or visit our website at praisechapelparamount.com.